We're making real progress fighting inflation. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. That is President Biden's reaction to the news this morning, showing a slight decline in inflation's annual rate, down from 2.6% in May to 2.5% in June. Though month over month, there was a slight increase in the PCE gauge the Fed tracks closely.
Many Americans are dealing with much higher prices for groceries, cars, and homes than they were a few years ago. At the same time, interest rates remain high. The Federal Reserve meets next week and is not expected to lower interest rates.
Fox's Jenny Casola on Wall Street. Stocks are surging, the Dow gaining 613 points. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu just landed in Florida a few minutes ago. He'll soon meet with former President Trump the day after sitting down with President Biden and then Vice President Harris, who said afterward, the war against Hamas has to end.
What has happened in Gaza over the past 9 months is devastating.
The vice president is the presumptive Democratic nominee after President Biden dropped out of the 2024 race and this morning got former President Obama's endorsement.
We called to say Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you and to do everything we can to get you through this election and into the Oval Office.
Parts of California are burning as a barely contained wildfire rages near Chico. It's charred more than 250 square miles, torching homes and cars and buildings, prompting evacuations.
I know that when they say get out, get out.
Scott Water left his Richardson Springs home Wednesday, 6 years ago. His house burned down in the 2018 wildfire that destroyed the town of Paradise. Sabotage in France, where the Olympics are underway. Arson and other vandalism disrupted train service outside Paris. Snarling travel.
Whoever is behind this clearly wanted to make a statement. Fortunately, no injuries have been reported, but a lot of the athletes are now unable to attend the opening ceremony that will be happening in just a few hours' time.
Fox's Stephanie Bennett. America's listening to Fox News.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could be lower testosterone.
Lower T.
Yeah, I went through it a while back. Once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. I got Nugenix Total T, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I've seen that ad on TV. Is it for real?
Oh, yeah. The key ingredient is something called Testnor, which helps boost free and total testosterone levels to help you trim up and stay lean.
And it's made a difference for you?
Man, I feel like I'm in my 20s again. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
Are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try it for themselves?
Yeah, you just need to send them a text.
Text PREP to 42424 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text PREP to 42424. That's PREP to 42424.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACUMA.com studios. 560 KBLU.
Happy Friday, everyone, from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Scott Gross. Water and sewer rates could soon be on the rise if you live in the Fortuna Foothills. The reason, according to the Foothills Water and Sewer Company, is rising costs and much needed improvements. They say the last time the waste fee was raised was back in 2013, and water hasn't been touched since 1999. Under the proposed rate hikes, water could see around a 15% jump, while sewer rates could more than double. The next meeting to voice any concerns is scheduled for Monday at the Foothills Library. And as local students get ready for school, so are local teachers. Over two dozen new teachers are set to begin this school year with the Gadsden School District. First day of school in the district is August 7th. Some local schools are starting earlier, including Welton Elementary School, which begins on Monday. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all of your local news, weather, and sports. I'm Scott Gross.
Excessive heat warning continues through the weekend. We're looking at no relief in sight. Now, sunshine in 112 today, 86 tonight, sunny in 113. On Saturday, 79 Saturday night. Sunday, sunny and 111, 110 on Monday.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr., wealth advisor.
I don't want to work, I want to bang. Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, Derek Egberg. Another nice day in sunny Yuma.
Very hot and humid. It's gonna be a scorcher.
Hey, it's nice for us desert rats. Anyways, hopefully the monsoon comes in, puts a little cloud cover over, and
makes
it a little moister, and that's what I'm waiting for. So, been a while since we've been on together. I know things we've been doing. So we're back on track. I have a couple thoughts, ideas in my head. I don't know if you want me to start right now.
Let's go. This will be a zinging show.
So I have some nieces and nephews, believe it or not, and they're renting, and we went over some numbers on, you know, buying a house. And when I crunched the numbers out, basically when I bought my house, it behooved you to get into a house because you basically paid less than rent. Mm-hmm. Now there's some upkeep in that, but it was a cash flow win-win than renting. And after crunching some numbers, it was almost a dead even. So with prices going up and interest rates going up, I think it's harder to get the cash flow.
Well,
right?
You're right, because now you're only looking at the cash flow. You're not looking at the principal reduction. You're not looking at the appreciation gain over time. You're not looking at and some people get potential tax write-offs, and some people don't with, you know, the standard deductions. But when you say cash flow, to me, on my side of the fence, that's like saying I'm only investing in a stock that's going to pay dividends. And if the stock doesn't pay dividends, I'm not buying it. But you invest in stocks because you see potential growth, right? And there's a whole different...
Yeah, I'm not questioning it. Long term, if you're break even, and you're going to be somewhere, buy it. But they're even questioning, like, you know, they don't have the long term commitment, because a lot of times they can only afford a pretty beat up one bedroom.
Right.
You know, it's not something that they could rent it out. But I don't know. I think the paradigm has changed for the younger generation.
Well, the paradigm has changed because we don't teach people to invest for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And you and on your side of the fence tell people, hey, this is a long term play. You're investing for retirement for life. You know, truly, the young person who's 25 years old, doesn't matter if the cash flows break even. They should buy a house now, start paying on it in 3 to 5 years when they're ready to go move again. Keep that one as a rental. It's already started being paid down. The appreciation rate, you know, is going up, even if it's 2%.
Yeah.
But you start building up a portfolio of real estate for the long haul.
Yeah, I'm not questioning that whole idea, because I agree with you. I'm just questioning the fact that for the younger people trying to get in a house, the numbers didn't work like they worked for us.
Correct. And you're right. You look at it and say, geez, it's the same cost. Great. If it's the same cost as renting, wouldn't you rather own it for yourself?
Yeah.
It's that immediate gratification where, you know, again, what you're talking about, when we got in, it was nice to say, hey, my mortgage payment's $200 less than I paid in rent. It makes complete sense. That was that approval of doing the home, as opposed to, hey, look, if I'm going to pay somebody, I'd rather pay myself rather than a landlord.
And I think the issue too is if they don't have a deep checking account or savings account, you know, if you do buy a house, let's just say the AC unit burns out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's another, you know, $6,000 or whatever they cost, probably more.
Could be.
And or pipe breaks or something weird happens. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think you're going to find, talking to younger generation people trying to buy, that discourage, I guess, would be the term.
There is some discouragement out there, and what you just talked about is the reason that you want to make sure you do home inspections, home warranties. You know, to the first home you're going to buy, strongly suggest getting a home warranty, something that, again, if the AC unit completely breaks, you've got that insurance policy, and that's what it is. You know, you drove here in your car. Do you have an insurance policy on the car?
I think so.
Great. I hope so. Check with your wife. You know, but you have insurance on your car. You have insurance on your house in case it burns down. You have life insurance in case something happens to you. You probably have medical insurance just in case something major happens. You know, having a home warranty is just that insurance policy for a major catastrophe. It's not changing a light bulb. It's not changing your AC filters. But Russ, you guys are doing huge repairs here at the office, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that was a homeowner with just a home without a home warranty, would that be an issue for most people?
Oh, man. That's going to be $20,000-$30,000, yeah.
Right, probably. But if there's a home warranty and that's a major system within, would that be covered? And I would say 95% of the time it would be.
Do you get home warranties on the houses you have?
So on a rental property, I do not.
Okay.
So when I've done my owner-occupieds, I do. But, you know, again, you and I know when you're doing repairs on a rental property, it's all a write-off anyway. So not to say it's no big deal. But I would rather know that the home I'm living in for the first year or two, I've got a warranty, so I know all the systems before I just let it go.
Yeah.
I don't have them on anything right now.
Okay.
Everything's expensive.
Yeah. Well, and not, you know, the insurance cost, you know, has gone up, you know, cars and houses.
Quite a bit.
Like, you know, 20-25%. So the reason why I brought this up is I listen to podcasts. I don't watch TV anymore. I like to find people with different ideas, especially financial stuff. And they were doing an argument, you know, about the American dream. And the American dream in every generation, you know, is there. I don't think we've lost it, but it's there in a different way. It changes a little bit. And, you know, they're saying that the younger generation, they actually are good savers. So they actually probably save more than even my generation probably. I mean, they're really good savers. What they lack at is they aren't risk takers. And so they were saying, and with the cost going up with housing, food, and other things, that they're not going to have the disposable goods like we had. Remember in the 80s and 90s, they used to have on shirts, I think the saying was, he who dies with the most toys win. That was like the saying.
Yeah.
And everyone had to go out and get a Razor and RV, you know, it was like toys.
Yeah.
So that's saying these guys are probably going to have to not have a lot of those items and not necessarily go to Starbucks every day, but find other ways to try to get your money compounding. Because it's all in the on how the money compounds and how much you put in, right? Two things. Put in more, let it compound earlier, you're going to be in a better position. So they're just saying that, you know, dreams out there, they just got to retweak what they're trying to do and come to some terms. And I will tell you, like, stocks, I didn't own a stock till I was out of college, probably 24, 25 years old. Never had an interest. And I, you know, just never came to my mind. And now with crypto and all these other things, I think that getting exposed at an early age on what is the stock market, Robinhood, you know, the teenagers are on there. And I know, you know, so they have some advantages that I didn't have. I mean, I don't know. How old were you with the first stock you bought? Not a mutual fund. I'm talking like you went out and bought a stock.
Went out and bought a stock probably 26, 27.
Yeah.
And was looking at the dividend reinvestment programs and kind of figured out a little bit of that. And,
yeah.
And you're right. It was harder to find the information back then. Now you can go right online. You can go on your phone and find out anything. It's a matter of, do you want to go actually look for it, or do you want to go down the road of being on social media and that dopamine fix in your brain that you're just there. Like Russ right now is on social media. I don't understand.
He's trying to appease his wife.
No, he's tired of listening to us, I think is what it is.
Hey,
but you're right. It's the instant gratification is when you say back in the 80s, you know, he who had the most toys wins, because that's what you went and bought and got showy. Now you see it's the 85, the 100-inch big screen TV. It's come over to my house and watch the Super Bowl type thing. You know, there are more consumables. It's less of a big, big, big ticket item. You know, and when you drive through neighborhoods, do you see a lot of disposable assets in the driveways?
I mean, depends on the neighborhood, but I don't think as many toys, right? As in the 80s and 90s?
I drive around and I see bigger boats, bigger trailers, bigger RVs, and you just assume.
That's because you live in the nice part of town.
Whatever. but you say, you know, how many of these have big screen TVs, not in the family or the living room, but in all of the rooms?
But to be honest with you, if you want to go splurge on a big TV for $500-$600, to me that's a small gratification. But I'm talking about going out buying a $25,000 Razor, going buying a boat that's just going to slowly suck money out of you, as they all do. So those are the big items. And, you know.
And that's why when you talk about going back to your nieces and nephews, you know, it's a one-page budget. It's boring. Do a budget, know how much free cash flow you have monthly, and then actually make a conscious decision to say, I'm going to take this much and put it into stocks, bonds. I'm going to put this much over into a dream fund. I'm going to put this much towards a house and start building the portfolio. Because do you see most people strike it rich within a month of buying stocks, Tom, honestly?
No.
No. You tell them what? Be patient for 20, 30 years?
2 months. Then they hit it rich.
2 months.
It's extra month helps out, though. But let me tell you this. So for younger people, really what you want to do is start early for retirement. But you also want to, your big move is buying your first house, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's key. So one of the products that people, they overlook, and I scream this at the top of my lungs, is every young guy person should do a Roth IRA account. Because it's a joint. It's joint. You can put money in. You can buy stocks. Hopefully they grow. But you can pull out any principal at any time to purchase your first house. Or any house, actually. I mean, you have to have primary living. So that's a double-edged, you know, you get both. You, mm-hmm. you can achieve both things. So a lot of people, like I hear, again, I go back to my nephew. Well, I'm saving to buy a house. Well, what are you doing? Well, it's in my bank account.
Yeah.
Okay, now how many times do you go out and like spend more than you should because your bank account's getting higher?
Yeah.
I said, pull that into a Roth, you know, and then when you're ready to buy, pull it out. You still have money in there.
Well, and to your point, when you say that, how many people go and they get a job and the job actually has a 401k
and don't
with
participate.
A match,
yeah.
And they don't participate, and you realize, same thing, you can borrow funds from your 401k to buy your first home and pay yourself back over time, so there's no penalty.
That's what I did. My first 401k at Dean Witter used that to purchase the home, and I wouldn't have been able to come up with a down payment. I mean, I was single, and I'm probably not spending my money as wisely as I should have, but that helped me out, yeah.
but you're right. That's the vehicle is if there was something to teach people, at least on my side, do a budget. Figure out how much free spendable money you have. Go invest it in a 529 plan, you know, if you have kids. If you don't, you put it in your own Roth IRA. You put it in a 401k. You actually start putting money towards a house. And it's just a boring plan to be budgeted and build wealth, you know, and it's nice to say, oh my gosh, I got into Bitcoin early and I made this much money. That's one of those talking points like, hey, I caught a fish, you know, this big. But truly, Tom, how many of your clients will be with you for 20, 30 years? And those are the people that quietly become wealthy.
Yeah. I mean, most of them, if you start early enough and save so much and don't put it in your mattress or in a, you know, no interest savings account. The key thing, though, if you really want to be above the normal and no one wants to be average, is figure out a way to gut it out from age, you know, 20, 22, 24 to 34 and put away a lot. Because with the compounding effect, the early ages, you know, the early time frame makes a big difference.
Yeah. You know, if secret sauce, let's talk about, you know, things that we wish we had done a little bit more effectively. Getting into stocks, bonds, and investments on your side. What do you wish you had done, and is there a boiled down plan of?
Well, I mean, I'm looking back, you know, I think I spent money semi-foolishly when I started making money. So I went out and bought a, you know, a nice car, new car, flashy car. I think I did that twice. And I kind of realized, you know, like, well, that didn't help me on my personal, you know, net worth or anything. So that was probably a big mistake. I already spent money on travel, but I don't have too many hobbies. So to me, that was kind of, you know, my hobby. I didn't have any toys, really. So I like travel. But yeah, I would say just purchases on how the money was spent. Because when you start out, you're like, you know, if I can only make this much money and then you end up making it and somehow it's you're still broke, you know, or you don't have, well, if I can only make this much money and then you hit that threshold. And then you accumulate more things.
Everybody's spending rises to the level of the water. It's like, you know, what's the old saying? A rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah.
It's everybody spending.
And then my other mistake was I should have kept my first house and just rented it out. I didn't even technically need the money from the house. I just thought, well, I'm moving, so might as well sell it. I
mean, nobody taught you that. And that's, on my side, that's the one thing. I don't care whether you start at age 28 or 48. You know, let's assume you buy your first home at age 28, just to use a number. Live in it 2 years, 2 years later, and let's pretend the first one you're going to go FHA 3.5% down. The next one you got to go 5% down conventionally. So 2 years later, you buy your next home, you turn the first one into a rental, just like you said. 5 years later, you go buy another home, moving up the food chain, because what you just said is everybody's income rises over time. But every 5 years, just buy a new home and slowly move up the economic food chain and turn the old one into a rental property. Now, Russ, Tom, do rents typically go up over time?
Yes.
Okay, so if you bought a home 5 years ago and now 5 years later you're going to rent it, would you assume the rent would outpace the mortgage? You would at least be able to cover it.
The mortgage should be locked.
Yeah, correct. It should be fixed.
So if the mortgage doesn't change and your rent rates are going up, would you assume you could cash flow? Maybe not very well because you didn't put a lot down, but would you cash flow on that rental property?
Yes.
So cool. Every 5 years you buy a new one and you just slowly start building that cash flow, which is what you started the show with, is sometimes the homes don't cash flow compared to a rental. But if you buy it with the idea that it's a business, you can do well. Now,
as you make more and more money and you get older, do you recommend instead of every 5 years, if you have the means, buy a rental house every other year?
Now you're going to get to the point that the first 3 to 4 homes up to 5, I would tell you, you're buying it owner-occupied, you're moving to the next one because you only have to put 5% down.
Okay.
When you actually start having the wherewithal to buy them as rentals, you're typically putting 20% down. So that, I would tell you, as fast as you can come up with 20%. But then the argument becomes, if I only have 20%, do I go buy another rental, or do I give it to you to invest in stocks and bonds, or do I need to make sure over every 2 years I can come up with 30%, put 20% down on a home and give you 10% to invest? So you do have to say, am I spreading out my portfolio, because I don't want to be just real estate. I don't want to be just 401k.
Some wise old guy who had a lot of money when I was younger at Dean Witter was giving me some advice, and he said it's like having four legs on a chair. Mm-hmm. He goes, when you die, you want to have. Now back then, a house was a big part of your net worth, and if you want a good lifestyle, you get a bigger and bigger house. So his theory was have about a 25% of your net worth in your house, 25% in the stock market, retirement plans, 401ks, whatever you want to say, 25% in real estate. And that could be anything, rentals, property. And then his other thing was 25% in a business. Because really, having a business isn't for everybody. But having a business has some good write-offs you can do, in different areas. So that was his theory, is just have four legs to the stool. And, you might adjust the legs as things progress a little bit.
Yeah.
But
you're 100% right on that. And that's why I say, even though I love real estate, that's not the only thing you need to do. It's just, this is automatic if you're slowly moving up the food chain. Imagine you and I both had that advice when you're 22, 23, just getting out of college, and said, Tom, buy your first home by 25, by 28, buy your second home.
Sure.
Then every 5 years, buy another one. What would that have done for your net worth?
Yeah, I mean, it would all be much better.
I mean, if you started at age 28... your first one is dang near paid off right now, is it not?
Yeah.
That's the hard part to get people to see, is it's just a boring discipline.
Yeah. It's a slow game, Mm-hmm. These charter schools and, they're becoming more of a play with the way the state is kicking in money for the tuitions with UMA Catholic or private schools. So they need to, that's what they need to do, is do more of a revamp on, have one class on how to get wealthy.
So let's you and I put that together. We'll start teaching it. So with what you see coming up this summer, do you see it as a good summer, bad summer? Are we going to...
As far as economy or...
Economy, people spending money. Are we spending too much money? Do people have disposable money? What do you see this summer?
Well, I think, there's like anything else, you have the haves and the have-nots. But I do think there's a upper class is going on vacation and things haven't missed a beat. They're not traveling and doing things. So I would say the economy's still going. I know I heard that cars are starting to repo more cars. The cars are getting repoed. As the credit cards are getting more maxed out and even out of, pay on time. So it's kind of both, I guess.
Here's, you know, you just said something about credit cards, and Russ, I don't know if you've looked at any of these stats. Are you guys familiar with the buy now, pay later split into four payments?
Of course.
Well, there's a firm, there's a company.
There's quite a few of them. You know those don't report to a credit report, right?
I did not.
No.
Those don't report to a credit report unless you miss payments and they file a collection on you. So, you know, as we start saying things like, wow, Americans owe more than $1.1 trillion on credit cards, that doesn't take into account all of these buy now, pay laters. And what's interesting is, you know, you go online and you start doing things.
Have you ever used it?
I've not.
Is it zero interest or not necessarily?
There are some. There's a couple of them that if you pay it in the four payments, it's zero interest. There's some that it is huge interest, depending on what your payment terms are. But it's so interesting that you could go online and, you know, you can buy your groceries with a firm. You can buy this week's food and split it into four payments. Now, think of what that does, though, because we're encouraging people to buy more than you might be able to afford in cash right now. And there may be a good reason to do it. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff on 0% interest rate credit cards. But let's say Russ goes out and buys the grandkids all of his toys and does the Affirm and splits them into four payments so it's not on his credit card. Does that give him permission to still go buy his own toys on his credit card and now he owes twice as much money?
Imagine that happens too.
And I think he's done that. Look at that face.
No, I have not done that.
So if you talk about the velocity of money, the quicker money changes hands, the better the economy is, the more wealthier people are. So that little program that you just talked about to me seems like another way to get money into people's hands. With not much effort. So it's a good idea. The question is, can people have the discipline to not overuse it, right?
That's the thing, is the discipline. Now, you know, I get to see people financially naked. And there's no judging when you're looking at credit and income, because we all do that. I think I talked to you about this last week, Russ, maybe 2 weeks ago. Had a gentleman come in that, you know, here's the tax turn, here's the credit report, so you look at all of the debts. But we are also obligated to say, is this your total financial picture? So when you look at the bank statement, this gentleman had, I'm not kidding you, 19 different buy now, pay laters.
19.
So you can have multiple. Oh. So let's pretend you mentioned the company Affirm. If you had two different payments with Affirm, they show up as two different items on your bank statement, so it's not all lumped into one.
No.
He had 19 different buy now, pay laters. They weren't all the same company.
But how do you know that if it doesn't pull up on your credit report?
Because we have to look at somebody's bank statements.
Oh.
So when I say, Tom, I need your assets to close.
So it's more work for you then.
Well, it's more work, but it's also one of those things where people go, well, that's not on my credit report. That shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And then what's super interesting is, you know, we have some things we can say, but there's certain things you certainly can't say. You know, when it's not there in the first place, and he went, here was his reason. You ready for this? Well, Derek, you said we couldn't go put anything else on credit because it would affect the mortgage.
Oh, geez.
So because none of that was there during his initial prequal. None of that was there when we originally underwrote the file, so we gave him the full underwritten approval. And what's interesting is, you know, his real estate agent, he did say to his agent, you know, I don't know why this is taking longer than it should because we were approved. It's not like you can say, hey, the reason it's this way is because he actually went out and did this, because now you're talking about the personal credit profile. But he had, get this, about $700 a month worth of additional payments.
And knock them out?
Just those buy now, pay later.
Buy now, pay later. No. Because he did everything. He did groceries. He had already put some furniture out there. He bought some tea. He did a lot of stuff that didn't. It was house, was clothes, was some stuff for the
kids. So now in your little manual you have, don't use credit card and don't.
It's always been in there. I literally.
He never heard that from you then?
I send it in an email.
Because you knew about not having the loan.
Yep. I send a letter. We talk to people. Don't do anything. Don't go buy anything. But he was under the impression that because it wasn't reported, that it wouldn't show up. But now you have to account for $700 worth of debt.
So So.
Or you got to pay it all off. So he had to.
And somehow he tried to make that your fault, right?
It always is. It's kind of like, you know, if my stock portfolio go down, it's not my fault. It's Tom's fault. I mean, come on, Tom. Why did you leave me in that stock? You should have known.
Yeah. I'm joking, but I know what you're talking
about.
But
how many times do you get a client who calls and says, oh my gosh, Tom, why am I down 20%? How did you not know?
Yeah. I don't want to lose money. Well, you're in the game of losing money.
Russ, I bought these tires from you 3 years ago. How did you not know it was going to pop on my way to Phoenix, for crying out loud, this year?
I just wasn't thinking.
Wasn't thinking. didn't put the summer air in my tires. Is that the problem?
Maybe we need to replace.
He just blames it on Chris.
Yeah,
talk to Chris.
Chris sucks.
So, you know, here's the thing, and I asked you a little bit. I think it's still a good time to buy, and you know, summer is typically nationwide the buying season because most areas of the country the weather isn't really good in the wintertime, and so you don't want to go buying homes in the summer. I think you're going to see a large number of homes bought nationwide, but look at the people who are still coming this direction. Look at the California people, look at the Washington people, look at the Oregon people who are moving here that were still competing with people who live outside of Yuma for the homes.
Sure.
You don't see homes sitting on the market. I talked to one of my good agents this morning just getting some information. He put a home on the market at 4:30 yesterday afternoon, had an offer at 6.
Wow.
So it's still a pretty strong market?
It's a very strong market because there's not enough houses out there. And you and I look at a home and go, geez, they want that much for that house because we've been around Yuma for 40 years.
Yeah.
And somebody coming from San Diego,
it's cheap.
They go, oh my gosh, that house is only, they add that word only in there. Yeah. And he had that home under contract in 90 minutes.
Yeah. That was a house kind of out on the Mesa where I live, and they listed it. It was a nice house, had garages for the RVs, and it looked really nice. I didn't go inside of it, but they were wanting $1.8 million, and I follow Realtor.com to see what's on the market. Mm-hmm. That's one of my dumb hobbies, but anyways, I was thinking to myself, in Yuma, $1.8 million, like, this is going to be a tough sell, right? Because anyways, they ended up selling it for like $1.45, and they moved it, I thought, pretty quick. I think it took like 3 months or 3.5 months. So I was like, dang, that was a pretty big house in Yuma to move.
There's a couple of big ones that are listed and a couple of big ones that have sold. And you know, again, it's perception.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, you sell your $3 million house in California, bring it over here, you get the better house for $1.45.
And that guy who just sold the home over there could literally probably pay cash depending on how long they own the home. So again, it's all perception that, you know, you look at that used car and you say, oh my gosh, that's an amazing used car that's been depreciated 50% from new. That's an amazing bargain. The guy who bought it first and took the depreciation, and it may or may not be a bargain. So I think we're going to take a break. We're halfway through the show. I don't understand how the time flies like this.
Russ is supposed to be telling us to take a break. And
no.
He's sleeping.
I've been doing social media.
He's social media. So this is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Hegerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
You might find out who you are. Woo!
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. Tom Rush, Russ Clark, Derek Egberg talking all things market, mortgage, money, and just silliness. 8:35 on a really, it's a gorgeous Friday, but oh my gosh, is it going to be a hot one?
So, it's going to be hot.
Stay indoors.
Yep.
Stay indoors.
So it's kind of interesting because I talked to someone up in Northern California. I'm trying to remember Roseville, if you know where the Roseville, mm-hmm. California is. He was like, yeah, the temperature's same as in Yuma. And I go, no, come on. And he told me, and it was almost. So it's kind of weird how the patterns have changed. I mean, as far as it's, you know, hot. I'm not saying different parts of the countries. Mm. Getting either more rain, less rain, those floods, you know, definitely things are changing. And I'm not saying it's from the green side of it, but just the way the world changes it. Places that don't get rain now are getting rain. Places that are cool are getting hotter. Mm-hmm. So
now, isn't it interesting, though, we assume you can boil everything down to a decimal point. I mean, can you really measure the Earth's temperature? You know, when people say, and I don't know the answer to that. Maybe Russ does because he's
talking about the surface?
Just when you say, when people say, you know, the Earth's temperature is rising, well, is it or isn't it? I don't you remember back in the, you know, previously when, oh, the Earth is getting colder.
Probably have sensor points, some on the equator, some north, some south, and take an average, I guess. I don't know.
It's
above my pay grade.
Yeah, but when you say, you know, on average, Yuma gets 2.5 inches of rain a year. That's average. That means it has to be higher some years and it has to be lower.
Well, we broke the record by March, right? And we got extra rain this year.
Yeah,
did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Last time they looked at it was like 1915 is when they started keeping track of it, and we broke it. This year has the most rain since 1915, and they broke it in March or April.
Yeah. So come on, monsoons.
Well, that'd add more. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, you know, these ice caps. If things were, you know, by them starting to melt too, things are shifting, you know, because that ice melts, right? I mean, that's a sign of something. So
should be, could be.
We're going to get to see all the pyramids that are up in the Antarctica once the ice melts.
There you go.
We had, you know, whole someone lived there, right? So
let's talk about where you see your nieces and nephews going in the next 20, 30 years, because I'm intrigued what you tell them. Do you help coach them that they can become wealthy and affluent over 30, 40, 50 years?
I don't know if you call it coaching, but I pound on my chest what they should be doing, and I charge them a hefty
fee. That's a different kind of coaching.
A hefty fee? No, I'm kidding. But, no, I try to tell them, you know, what to do, but I don't know. See, I don't know if you call it coaching.
You said risk earlier in the first segment, and that's what's interesting with my boys is it's like, guys, I don't care what you want to do. You know, you want to go do anything, chase the dream, and let's go hard at it. Just so long as you're budgeting and you're putting some money away and you take a little bit of risk and you actually get out of your own way for buying real estate, buying stocks, buying bonds, and start a business. And, you know, one of my sons, his favorite movie group is Fast and Furious. And, you know, the quote-unquote tuner shop that one of the stars in there has. And he's like, Dad, I would love to build a shop like that. Cool, do it. Start your own business. Let's go. You know, invest and build something for yourself.
Is he a mechanic?
He is. He's a mechanic. And it's like, go, dude. Let's have some fun. As long as you're budgeting and you're putting money away for your business and a house and some stocks and get after it, how many times over your lifetime do you hear people say, no, don't do it. It's too risky. Hmm. Oh, you shouldn't do that. You know, Russ, you shouldn't go into business and start an auto shop. There's too many of them in town. You know, how many times, if you were younger, would your parents say things like that?
Sure.
Why do you see so many people coaching people to the negative as opposed to what you're saying, pound on the chest and...
Because they're trying to bubble wrap you and protect you from failure.
Is that it? Or is it you would hate to see somebody succeed?
I think 7.5 out of 10 people are risk adverse. I think. I mean, you know, to different levels, but they're risk averse.
Yeah.
The other three are usually the ones that are, you know, doing things. And, you know, us three in the room, luckily we're probably one of the three. But there's a lot of people that, you know, if they can go to work, get their paycheck every 2 weeks, and they get their bills covered,
yep,
they're happy. And that's
my,
the life.
My parents wanted me to join the post office and work there because they couldn't fire me because of the union.
Dang, you screwed up, Russ.
Yeah.
You could be screwed up by now.
I don't know how Postmaster Clark would sound. I'm
not
sure.
No, they just wanted me to sort mail.
You have to, yeah.
But I don't say, hey, get a good career and build a retirement is a bad thing. But isn't it interesting how many people say, no, don't try that, that's a dumb idea, or no, don't do that, that's stupid, or I knew a friend three generations ago, you know, twice removed in New York that did something like that and it didn't work well.
Right.
But wait a minute. I mean, would you have told Elon Musk not to start things like PayPal, or would you have said, hey, you know, Bill Gates, don't start Microsoft? You know, how many people told him, no, that's a dumb idea, and they're the ones that actually succeeded?
Yeah.
Well, I would have definitely told Musk not to do the rocket ship, take the PayPal money and run.
Yeah, he almost lost all that, too.
He did. He risked it all.
Yep.
He didn't care. You know, he had a mission. He wanted to get to the Mars.
Dream and a vision.
A lot of these podcasts I listen to now, a lot of them about him. And
yeah,
it's amazing what that guy's doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, he has like four other companies that can explode just as much as Tesla if things go his way.
Oh, gosh, yes.
I mean, he's going to be the first trillionaire. You watch.
Yeah, he's not far from it.
Yeah. Hey, so you know, actually, that is, these things talking about energy is going to become a big deal because you get more people and energy resources. Some of them are maybe running out. So they're saying the next trillionaire, besides maybe Elon Musk or someone like that, is going to come from energy. And they're saying that some people claim they have energy infusion or, you know, perpetual energy. Mm-hmm. And there's a company out of Massachusetts that built like a big cement building to try to, they think they had it, but anyways, whoever's the first guy to hit that technology will kill it. Now, how will they do it? I don't know. And is it even capable? I don't know. But that's saying that it's this close to happening. Even Elon Musk says, you know, it's all science. You just got to figure out the science of it.
I think I've seen the movie Val Kilmer and the Saint. I think that was part of the movie. But I think if you go back and do some research, isn't that what Nikola Tesla actually was developing? Free wireless energy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so then the question is, did we actually have it?
Well, there is a law passed, I think, in Congress, like in 1950s or something, where they would take technology that was just going to disbar everything. So if you can get, you know, like a gasoline or a car gets ran on water, that's going to really put the petroleum companies out of business. And they would go in and just buy the technology. Not even, they'd take it from you, give you some kind of compensation. So they were saying with Tesla, like they took some of his things mm-hmm. and just buried it because it was good ideas, but it was going to disrupt, you know, certain people. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a law in Congress, so I'm sure it's happened, right? Maybe it's already out there and they just, I don't know.
Who knows? That's about 27 steps above our pay grade. But you're right. The energy is going to be an issue. Now, you were just talking about, you know, what happens if you have lots of businesses move down to, say, Yuma County? Do we have the electric grid ready to go for that? What if you had large industries, you know, and I know Elon Musk moving from California to Texas is not going to be that game changer. But what if you had large segments move from one area to another based on either politics or economic reasons? Are you ready energy-wise for that?
Well, Yuma's not, because I just went to the Greater Yuma Economic Development Lunch, and they're saying that they're trying to bring more power down here because there's bigger companies that are looking to maybe do business down here, and they need more power. So,
and that's not an instantaneous thing.
Yeah.
You know, what did they say? Would it take a year, 2 years, 3 years? Is it generation, or is it just transmission?
I think it's more like, I don't know, I think he threw out the 3 to 5 year plan kind of thing. So it takes a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Russ, I got a question. You know, we were talking investing, and it seems to me we need to ask you about used cars.
Okay.
Are you seeing more people hold on to their cars longer? I mean, can you identify a trend? Do you see people trying to keep their cars?
It's been like that for the last 3 or 4 years. It has been, or even maybe a little longer. But cars now, the average age keeps going up because people are keeping them longer. And they're better built. They last longer. And new cars become so expensive. They have new trucks. Look at a new truck, four-door loaded, $100,000.
So it's not that we have better mechanics. They're better built? Just take the bow. Just say
they're
going to
last longer. They're going to last longer. You know, people say like in the 40s and the 50s, boy, I wish they built them like that. They don't build them like they used to. That's true because when the older cars used to have to do a valve job after 5,000, 10,000 miles. We just drive them now. We don't think anything about it.
Right. So question for you, when you say $100,000 truck,
yeah,
would you drive a diesel or would you drive a gas?
For me, gas, because I don't do the hauling. If you're doing hauling, diesel. You know, these guys that have motor, you know, these fifth wheels and stuff.
Is it hauling or long distance?
Long distance and hauling. Yeah. Both. Yeah. Usually the same. But long distance wouldn't bother me too much in the gas. But when you start putting a lot of weight on it, you know, you're going to do much better with the diesel.
So how do you feel about, you know, again, some of the European countries that they're doing lots of vehicles on diesel?
Over 50% are diesel in European countries.
Why do you think we haven't transitioned to more?
EPA.
Okay. Now, did we or did we not go through this whole clean diesel and all this other stuff? And I'm pretty sure we had to retrofit all the semi-trucks to be clean diesel.
Well, they go away. They buy new ones. But, yeah, but if you have an older diesel pickup truck, an older one, you don't have to retrofit it necessarily. But you can't go into California.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, but you're still grandfathered in on some of the older ones.
So do you believe we're going way more electric? Do you believe we're going to get diesel vehicles? Is it both? I know,
I don't believe the diesel's going to grow much more. I mean, the diesel's a pretty good size market, but it's not 50%.
No, but you also don't see them in many small cars.
No,
like you do
work here because of the regulations.
So it's regulation, not consumer sentiment?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And in Europe, the gas is so expensive. And diesel's a good deal on that. But diesels are more maintenance. You know, these
How
guys.
How often do you have to maintenance diesel compared to
Well, I would
gas.
Change oil and those every 3,000 minimum. You know, you just do it because it gets dirty. And it's a lot more money. Injectors on a diesel are like $1,000 a piece, and you have a V8, you know. Or, you know, that's not good. Or a 6-cylinder. But again, they're going to last. You know, I've seen injectors last 500,000 miles.
Hmm. Okay.
But so still, when they break,
they break.
Get your pocketbook.
So do you see the used car market and keeping the, you know, your vehicle 50% longer, 100% longer? Do you, you know, let's say his nieces and nephews.
Depends on the time frame. But look, in the 70s. You know, people would buy new models every couple of years all the time. Not a lot of people do that anymore. You don't buy a new model just because a new model came out. You hang on to them, with the exception of those guys at least maybe. But you hang on to it because you see a 12-year-old SUV on the road. It doesn't look aged.
Well, go back to like Midnight at the Oasis. You know, you walk through the car show and you say, oh, that's a 1956. That's a 57 because of these small discrepancies.
Can't do it today.
Now they're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years worth of the generation that almost nothing changes.
And you look at Teslas. All Teslas look the same. You can't even differentiate between the SUV Tesla and the regular Tesla. You should put them side by side and see one's bigger.
Well, you can, but...
But it's minute changes. It's
okay,
not.
we need to refer Russ over to an optometrist. For crying out loud, he can't tell the difference between an SUV and a sedan.
But because you care about cars, and I care about cars, I can tell. But a lot of people...
I probably couldn't tell. It's an SUV.
That's how do you know?
I think Tom just admitted he'd still put gas in the gas tank and the Tesla can't.
But those
it
days
out.
Are on. You know, Tesla keeps changing the insides. The outsides look exactly the same.
Now... How do you feel about the stock steering wheel? You know, he's got the yoke as opposed.
I like the yoke.
Do you?
Yeah, it's more like a game console.
Okay.
it's like you're flying a plane, right?
Yeah, it is. It's,
I'm not driven one. I mean,
people don't like it because they're not used to it, and it seems weird. But it makes perfect sense. It takes up a lot less room. You know, there's no reason to have the big steering wheel. The big steering wheel because...
But when I drive on the freeway, I usually go right up top. That's yeah. what relaxes it.
You can't do that, right?
Yeah.
There is no up top.
Yeah.
But you
can
grab
it with... an accessory that clips from this side.
You can get that. But you can grab it from one hand. But used to the old trucks and cars, they didn't even have power steering.
Yeah.
So you needed a great big steering wheel for leverage. And someone would have that little ball on it.
The knob,
you'd have knob and crank it and stuff. All this power steering and progressive steering... And that's not a political thing. Progressive meaning that the more left you turn the wheel, the progressive the steer the wheel turns farther and farther mm-hmm. the more left, so that you don't have to turn all the way around anymore.
So Tom says his hand is on top of the steering wheel, but some of these new cars you don't even put your hand on the steering wheel.
Well,
you just sit there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he needs a hand free for the beer, is all.
And it's just interesting that you see a lot of these cars. 10 years old, 12 years old, 15
nice.
Years old, 20 years old, and they still, they run.
And look, you like classic cars? You drive mm-hmm. something that's, I have a 1997 out there. You know, that's, 27 years old or something.
But you can get those copper plates. That's a classic
now. No, I don't need that. But I like the car, mm-hmm. and fixing it's not a big deal. You know, I'll put
a few extra rubber bands on around it. And,
yeah, it's not a big deal because we have that, fortunate I have that ability right in my backyard. I mean, I have guys that I could just say, hey, put a new engine in this, and they can just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like cars are getting built better today.
Technology's awesome.
Yeah. But you can use it for 15 years and not...
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see some stuff. You know, it depends on the cars, but like some of your Toyotas and stuff, you know, you'll see 300,000, 400,000 miles on them. And I say, shouldn't you guys change the oil? I had an engine take out of my GMC recently, had 260,000 miles on it. Chris changed it because it sounded like it was going to eventually fail, like it started having a tap or something. But the engine was fine. It's still running, and I don't take good care of it.
So did he take it out and replace it, or did he re-machine it and put it back in?
He got a rebuilt engine. It was totally rebuilt and did it in the morning. You know, it came out and went back in the same day, and I was driving it that evening.
What do you do with the engine? Scrap it or metal?
It goes in as a cord. It goes back to the manufacturer, to the rebuilder. They rebuild
it
again.
And then they send it back to you? Or you just sell it and they do it?
It's a core. But, you know, so like when you buy a new engine, they charge you a couple grand for the engine and another grand for the core. Oh. When you send them the core, they give you the grand back.
Oh.
So what does that cost for somebody who wants to keep their vehicle and just drop a new motor in?
Depends on the vehicle, but... On my GMC, I had like the 4.7, which is a very common low. I mean, it's not a high tech engine or anything like that. They made millions of them, mm-hmm. so you know it didn't cost me very much.
But now you're talking about I don't need to be showy with the car. I'm comfortable with the drive. It's transportation, not a status symbol.
Correct, and it's a GMC 4-door truck. It's nice. Mm-hmm. I like it. It didn't come with any bells and whistles, but I've had other stuff installed in it, you know, different stereo.
Air conditioning?
Yes.
It's all that matters right now.
It'll blow you out. It's so cold. But
do you get quite a few things where the person coming in for your services, you keep it, then you get to recycle and get, like, money back somehow? Like, is that a good part of your revenue or not?
I'll take the cores and everything that are scrap, like old rotors, drum rotors and stuff, and I'll take it down to the recycler, and they'll pay me for that.
Even like, say, shocks. I mean,
I take them down to recycler.
Yeah, okay.
But I wait until I get a ton of it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally 2,000 pounds, and then I'll take it down and get $100 or something.
Yeah, okay.
It's not worth it for you to take one shock down and get a quarter.
Yeah, so it's not.
Spend $5 in gas to get the quarter.
No, but it sounds like if you can redo an engine and they're going to pay you $1,000, that's some money there, right?
Well, that's a core because it goes back to the manufacturer and they want to rebuild that.
Yeah.
But if you take it to the scrapyard, you know, it's just a few cents a pound, a few pennies a pound. It's not much.
Besides the engine that goes back, is there any other parts that go back with a little bit more profit margin on that or not really?
No. Well, there's starters, alternators, engines, turbos, you know, that they get rebuilt that you can use, can send back as cores. But they charge you for the core when you buy the new one. You got to get the core back just to get your money back. You're not making money on it. It's a break-even proposition. We don't charge the customer for the core. Because we know
like
we're
the
getting
old Coca-Cola bottles. You paid the extra nickel deposit, and then you got the nickel back.
Correct.
So
it's, like that.
No, I can't even imagine that that would be a great money-making opportunity.
It's just
not throwing it in the landfill.
We don't throw it in the landfill, and we take it back to the recyclers. We get a couple $100 on it.
So, like, I mean, with electric cars, you guys don't do any work on them, right?
We have.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, they're just cars. They got tires and brakes and other stuff. Yeah. You know, we
besides
can do all that.
The engine or whatever it is.
We've done some electrical. We have some. We've had some training on disconnecting some electrical stuff to where you wear special gloves that go up to your elbows.
Special
and
gloves,
stuff.
Special shoes.
Because that thing, those are high voltage. Mm. They're nothing to play with. And if you don't know what you're doing, don't grab it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Could it kill you?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It could kill you.
Okay. Hugely. Like,
I mean, a battery. I've gotten shocked by a battery before. That wasn't fun.
Yeah. Chris doesn't
that's
like
low
them.
Voltage.
Yeah.
Not these are high voltage. This is, you see the electricians that go out and work on the high voltage lines with those gloves. It looks like, yeah.
And they have expiration dates and everything. You can only have them so long, but. Yeah, and you don't want to play with that. You get.
Are you finding a lot of these batteries aren't lasting as long as they should?
No, I find that it's opposite.
They're lasting longer.
Yeah, the earlier Teslas that they put in the 90s are still on the road, staying battery.
Okay.
Yeah, we think of them like our lead acid batteries, where a hot summer, we forget to charge it and it's dead in 6 months or a year or 2 years and it's gone. Now, I've got a lithium on top of my Suzuki there that's been there for 2 years. It's a lithium battery because I have a solar panel on it.
Mm-hmm.
The warranty on that is 10 years, but they'll go 20.
Yeah.
So what's the recycling of the batteries? Because at some point, whether it's 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, the batteries are dead.
Elon Musk helped 10 companies get started on that, and there's 10 companies or so better doing it. There's a couple here in Arizona that will take old batteries from Teslas, old batteries from any electric car, and break them down and get the original components out, like 95% of the original components, the nickel and all of that.
And then turn it right back around and rebuild them.
Right. And it starts becoming part of the, and Musk has talked about it, that there's a lot of mining going on now to build up the inventories, because we don't have the inventories for everybody to own one.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually when that inventory's up, this stuff gets recycled and it's reused, just like modern cars are. You know, when you take a modern car, you take it in, they crush it, they melt it down, and all that steel goes back in to make it another car. They'll be doing the same with the batteries.
What do you think the cycle is for that? Is it 10 years to build the inventory, 20 years, 30 years?
40. unless Biden is right that in by 2025 or 2030, 2035.
They force it down our throat.
We're all going to be driving electric cars. That's ridiculous. Can't happen. There's not a power grid that can do it.
Yeah.
So if you have an old battery and you, like you said, they're going to recycle it,
yeah,
it will come back with the exact same potential, is a little lower, like battery charge wise. I mean,
you mean like a lead acid battery in your car?
Yes. Well, no, like a Tesla battery.
Tesla battery.
Well, it slowly lose.
They will deteriorate depending on how you take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these cars riding around now, you know, I've heard that they're only like 95% of what they were originally.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and once they get down to like 90, they consider them, you need to replace
them. But if they revamp it, it goes back to 100?
Well, they can't really revamp them.
No, you're talking about rebuilding.
Rebuilding.
No, well, but
when
you tear the battery down and you recycle it and rebuild it, now it's just a
lot of those batteries are just hundreds and hundreds of the little AAAs or AAs in there.
Oh, yeah?
So they can open them up and take a few bad ones out and put new ones in. There's people doing that with some of the older Teslas.
AAA batteries in a big battery?
Well, the
it's basically that size.
They were like laptop batteries built in series. I mean, if you pulled them apart, they were literally.
Yeah, they're not good. Hey, you're out of time. You got to go. Hey, you got 20 seconds.
This is Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. Thank you for all of our armed forces, both now and previous, that allow us to talk like this on the radio. Stay safe. Have a great weekend.
Enjoy.
The opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.